time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120 KMOX.
Good morning, John Hancock.
What's going on, big boy?
Not much.
It's good to be here with all of our dozen listeners and spending our Friday morning here.
It is fun to be on KMOX.
Yes, it
is. And last night was my birthday. I did not get obliterated. And the reason I bring up the word obliterated, John,
yes,
is because it's taken over our politics right now.
You don't say.
So we had the Iran-Israel attack. America winds up getting involved.
Yep.
President Trump speaks to the nation. He makes the pronouncement that Iran's nuclear program has been obliterated. I thought it was a good talk. Sounded like it was a good speech. And then the next day, it all breaks into this huge fight that continues almost a week later over whether or not the nuclear program was truly obliterated. I don't get why we're fighting about this. It was a huge hit. It was a good thing. We may have to hit more. We may have to continue to hit them. Why are we fighting about whether or not it was obliterated?
Well, because the president wants everything to be perfect, and there's a lot of people that want everything the president does to be a disaster. And so you've got these two competing forces out there, and what we ought to be looking at is whether or not the United States was justified in participating in that attack. Three different locations that were, per intelligence, part of the nuclear program of Iran. And by any objective measure, that military event was a success. And it was a success on a number of levels, not the least of which is they kept it secret, which is quite a feat for this administration. Now, subsequent to the attack, of course, the intelligence came out and indicated that Iran quite possibly moved a lot of their enriched uranium out of the one facility a couple days prior to the attack. So, you know, I think Iran is probably still intent on developing nuclear weapons, and that would fundamentally alter the geopolitical situation in the Middle East in a way that is not helpful to America or its allies. So there is an American national security interest in thwarting Iran's effort to develop nuclear weapons, and we did that, and I think met with success, but I don't think it was unequivocal success.
And I don't think that necessarily means it was unsuccessful.
Right.
It was
right.
A complete success. Crystal ball, do you think we will be participating in more attacks on Iran?
I don't. I mean, if you want me to actually read the crystal ball, I don't think we will be participating in more attacks. I think that right now there needs to be an open dialogue with Iran. And I don't know that, you know, there was some speculation early on that this was about regime change. I don't think that's what this was about. Certainly not from the Trump administration. And regime change in Iran could be, you know, could go a whole
decades.
Lot of different ways.
Decades.
Right. And but I think now that maybe there's some space for dialogue and some legitimate inspection of their nuclear facilities, and that would be a good thing.
While the president juggles the international conflicts in both Ukraine and Iran, he's also trying to pass his what arguably may be his biggest and signature piece of legislation, that big, beautiful bill.
Might be the only significant legislation that is passed in this second term.
Yeah, it made its way through the House and got over to the Senate. It's got some issues from a parliamentarian standpoint.
Yep.
In the Senate, as well as from majority party members, including one from Missouri, saying this dog is not going to be looking like it is right now.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, the process that the Senate is doing is called reconciliation, which means it has to be budget specific and not policy specific. And there are some aspects of this thing that are public policy. And the parliamentarian has ruled, I think, correctly, that you can't have those kinds of things in a reconciliation package. And so that's the debate now. And you've got the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world saying they just need to fire the parliamentarian.
They don't have the votes to do that.
No. And
they don't have the votes to do much.
No.
Including pass this bill.
Yeah, it's going to be very tricky. And there's some elements of this thing that, you know, I don't like. But the Republicans have to pass something. And so something is going to pass. It's going to pass through the Senate, go back to the House, and they're going to pass it. What it's exactly going to look like, who knows?
Do you, the president had set this imaginary boundary of July 4th that he wanted to try to get this big, beautiful bill done by.
Yeah.
That doesn't look like that's going
to
happen.
I can't imagine. I mean, it could, but I wouldn't expect it to pass by next week.
There are some concerns for the Republican Party, and this isn't new, right? We always have presidents who come in. They ask members of their party to make hard votes at the very beginning, and it winds up being consequential.
Sure.
Typically cost control of the United States House. I think people anticipate that this is going to be a good cycle for the Democrats. But the Senate's got some vulnerability as well. You got a guy like Josh Hawley, who's not necessarily in jeopardy of reelection right now.
Right.
Who's wavering, but he's kind of setting a signal for a lot of red state senators who don't want to take their own people off of Medicaid and take away their health insurance.
So one of the carve-outs they've done here, Holly's going to vote for this thing, and one of the carve-outs they've done here is that they're taking care of the Medicaid programs in red states and not blue states.
Wrong.
And so for senators like a Josh Hawley, who also has his... the nuclear waste problem,
right,
at the landfill.
Mm-hmm.
He's put the settlement money into this bill, and because that's one of his signature pieces of legislation, he's going to vote for this thing.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of money being spent even on TV trying to persuade him.
I understand, but yep. I think he's going to vote for it, and especially if they carve out the red states on the Medicaid side, there's no rationale for him to vote no. It's not good policy to bifurcate the states and say we're going to take care of these states and not these other states. That's not a good precedent, but that's where the thing is right now.
Was surprised to see you here this morning. I thought you might be going to the big wedding.
The big wedding?
Yeah, the Jeff Bezos wedding.
Why would I go to that?
Because you kind of could maybe be a body double.
Of Jeff Bezos?
Yeah, you know, you look like a billionaire. You got that bald head. You look good in a nice suit. You could have, they could have had you out there.
Jeff
you could have
Bezos.
Been hanging with Tom Brady and Oprah Winfrey.
The only thing I know about Jeff Bezos is his products show up on my front porch on a very regular basis.
Well, enough products that he literally was renting out the entire city of Venice. Did you see this?
It's a lot.
Spending like $60 million on his wedding. He's meeting huge backlash and protest, etc., as this income gap continues to be a worldwide narrative. I just was curious what you thought of Bezos wanting to rent out a whole city.
That's
a lot. Could have rented out St. Louis for him.
That's a lot more than I spent on my daughter's wedding, I'll tell you that.
What do they call that when you stand under the thing for your wedding vows, the bridge or the little flower thing?
Yeah, the little...
We could have set it up under the arch for him.
Could have done it.
He could have rented the whole city for what, $5 million?
Oh, easy.
We didn't $50 million.
Yeah,
we could have floated him down to Mississippi
River. He could have even paid for overtime for the police.
Exactly. We would have had extra security. He's John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. We're going to step aside when we come back. Lots of local stuff to talk about. A new police board in St. Louis. Happy Friday, St. Louis. Welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show. John, the week started off with the governor of the state of Missouri making good on his promise. He delivered the bill that took back local control of the St. Louis Police Department. He appointed his new board, has a lot of household names in it. Don Brown, the car dealer. You've got the Saracenos, the own Bartolinos.
Yeah.
Eddie McVeigh, who owns
Maggie O'Brien's.
Maggie O'Brien's, and a couple others that are on that board. A well-known, liked board. The governor introduced this board. And, John, I was head-scratching because listening to Governor Kehoe talk about Chief Tracy and talk about the direction of the St. Louis City Police Department headed in the right direction, you would have never have known he just ran a campaign for governor saying that he needed to upend the whole system.
Well, you will recall, Michael, that the mayor of St. Louis at the time Mike Kehoe was running for governor was one Tishara Jones. And the police chief was reporting to one Tishara Jones, who was in favor of policies that were progressive and were in favor of defunding the police. You will recall that Tishara Jones wanted to substitute social workers for police officers. And I think it was under that context that Mike Kehoe ran for governor and said we need a citizen board, a local citizen board, to supervise the police department. And that's what he's done. And I think it's not going to solve every problem, but you're going to have now a board to whom the chief and the police department report that has their back. And I think that is a step in the right direction.
Is there also a board here that the governor controls? I mean, well, let's be honest about the politics, right? Crime in St. Louis has been a deadly topic, literally and politically. We've been dealing with it for quite some time. Yeah. This man ran for governor. This wasn't a conversation that took place just in the corners of the St. Louis metro area. This was being discussed throughout the state.
It was.
If we don't see significant change inside the city, does Mike Kehoe now have a board where he'll be able to control and make those changes? Because I don't know. I really felt like listening to Mike Kehoe and Chief Tracy the last week sounded very similar to a lot of the things that was being said when Tashara Jones was the mayor. Hey, things are headed in the right direction. I'm not concerned about anything. No major changes need to take place.
Well, there are changes that need to take place. And two of them that I can cite is we need an increased number of officers in the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. And we need an increased number of police officers who are on the street. Some significant percentage of the police force in the city of St. Louis is wearing white shirts and working in offices. And we need blue shirts on the street addressing the crime problem. I think that will improve.
Good to know. Hey, the other brand of law enforcement in the city of St. Louis, all they don't have much responsibility other than to deal with the prisoners, is the sheriff.
Yes.
In the city of St. Louis. Boy, this guy continues to be a fountain of content for local talk shows.
It's really breathtaking.
It's almost Kim Gardner-esque, is it not?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what, now we hear the Attorney General is going to go after him for a number of charges. He's ultimately going to probably get him removed.
Yeah.
Much like Kim Gardner. He deserves to be removed based on the facts that we've heard to this point. But this isn't good, what's happening. And I think city voters better wake up soon that they're continuing to send people to do jobs, to elect them to jobs that they don't want to actually do the job they have. And now, as a result of their incompetence and action or inability to do the job, it's not only making it palatable, it's almost making it acceptable for the Republicans to come in and take over city government.
Yeah. One of the problems, and we've talked about this before, but when you elect these very consequential leaders in March and April elections, when hardly anybody shows up, the odds of electing somebody like a Kim Gardner or this guy are enhanced. And one of the reforms I think that would make a world of difference in the city is if you move those elections and you have the August primary and the November general election, you'd have greater voter participation and less likelihood that somebody like this gets elected to office.
Well, and it's just, like I said, I'm a city person. I don't like the fact that the state has taken control of our police department. I don't like to see the state constantly having to come in and deal with city government. But I don't know that we as the citizens of St. Louis are giving much reason to those who might have a political agenda to not be able to come in and do what they're doing. This incompetence and this inability to do what you're hired to do, follow the law, is stunning to me. I think it's one of the things I find really encouraging about Donna Behringer. She wanted that job, and she's actually doing that job.
Yeah, and
nothing else.
Apparently that office was just a mess when she walked in.
To be the treasurer, that's what she wanted to
she's
be.
She's called on the state to audit it.
Right.
And so we'll see how that goes. Slow and steady progress wins the day. Well-